Another really important thing that I recommend doing at any phase in a career is talking to people who you think have the dream job, whether it be you're not happy where you are, or, you know, you just wonder who you want to be in 10 years, even if things are going well. But it's also by having those conversations in a no threat environment, you're not in a job interview, they're going to ask you about you too. And it's going to help you to talk about yourself in ways that maybe you haven't. And by talking about yourself to people who you're emulating, it helps you to figure out who you are too, and helps you to figure out what that purpose is, what is interesting to you, what is resonating for you about what they're doing. What are the parts of the conversation that are exciting you and are like, yeah, this is what I want to be doing. This is who I am. This is where I'm coming alive.
Hello, welcome to A Work in Purpose. If you're asking yourself, what is my purpose? Then this podcast is for you. I am Wing, your host. In each episode, I interview people who are living out their purpose. I share their journey and the wisdom they've learned along the way so you too can discover and start living out your purpose. Hey, I'm sorry that it has been a while since I released an episode. I actually recorded this interview back in February, but something was blocking me from releasing more episodes. I wasn't sure what it was. As the world started getting back to normal, was I just getting distracted? Was it because I've been busy with my new job? Or was it fear and doubt kicking back in? Well, if you've heard episode 18 with Mick Lolikonda, the author of The Purpose Roadmap, one important point he made was that our purposes can shift over time. One purpose can lead to your next purpose. And I realized that that was what had happened to me. When I started this podcast, its original purpose was really for me to find out how to find my purpose. By making a podcast, I was able to invite others to join along on this journey for us to all learn. And I've gotten my answers. I also realized that my purpose has shifted. Thanks to this podcast, so many synchronicities happen and so many new paths open to me. I've met other people on the spiritual journey who I would have never met if I hadn't started this podcast. I've explored so many areas of spirituality as a result too. What's funny is that this was not originally supposed to be a spiritually themed podcast, but somehow it turned into one. Which is great because I've gotten more clarity that one of my current purposes is to explore ways to align my creativity and spirituality. I also started a new job last November that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the learnings from this podcast. It helped me know with certainty what I was looking for. So in a nutshell, I joined a workplace technology company that makes hybrid work possible. Our bigger mission, however, is to bring people back together in workplace environments in our case. And as you know, during the pandemic, for 2 years, so many of us felt lonely. It was bad already before, but damn, all of a sudden, our sense of belonging was lost. So I'm feeling very grateful that I can now contribute to this bigger purpose of helping to give people a sense of belonging once again at work. Because from doing over 20 interviews for this podcast, I've heard repeatedly that we all need people in our lives who support us and push us forward to reach our full potential and purpose. In other words, we all need a strong sense of belonging to live out our purpose. Since we spend so much of our time working, you might be wondering, how do I find my purpose at work? To answer this question, I am very excited to introduce our guest this episode. Dana Mitra is a professor of education policy studies at Penn State University. She's the author of the book, Empowered Professor. She also works as a leadership coach where she coaches professors on how to find one's purpose in their work. But her insights can be applied to professionals in most types of work too. So if you are wondering how you can find more purpose at work, listen on to hear from the amazing Professor Dana Mitra. Hello, welcome to A Working Purpose podcast, Dana Mitra. So excited to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote this book called The Empowered Professor, which has a lot of great insights on how to thrive in the workplace, particularly in the university setting. It even has a section about tapping into your purpose within the workplace. So I'm very curious, why did you write this book?
I wrote this book because it's just so important to understand why we do what we do. And I think a lot of us, including myself, chases for gold stars, right? Through our whole life, we were rewarded for being successful and getting all the things you're supposed to be getting in your life. And I hit a point in my own career where I had gotten all the gold stars and I was wondering what the point of it all was. So why, you know, and I think for all of us at some point in our lives, we go through this journey of switching from external praise to finding something inside of us that drives us to want to do the work that we do. And one way that I describe it is, does the work that you do feel like it's energy in and it's very fulfilling? Or does it feel like energy out, like a Voldemort Death Eater, perhaps? So finding purpose is about finding that inner light and the type of work that feeds us. And the more that we feel that sense of being fed, the more we're on the right track to what our purpose is. And we could have a lot of purposes, but key to that is that inner sense of fulfillment. And even if everyone else outside said, maybe this isn't the thing for you, you would still find something about it that's meaningful.
Great. So you wrote this book particularly for professors in university settings. What did you observe in that environment that propelled you to write this book? Like, why do they need it more so? Or maybe not me more so, but just in general, why?
Yeah, we all need this work. I'm a professor myself, and I've spent my career studying ways that young people and youth can have a voice in school systems and ways that they can make a difference in the world. And part of that is what I call the ABCs. And what I realize is that it applies to all of us, not just young people. So we need agency, which is a sense that we have some control over the life that we live and control over the work we do, control to connect to our purpose. All of our work has something to do with belonging and connection. And in the pandemic, even the most deepest introvert is realizing they need to reach out and connect more. And then competencies is a C, is that there's a certain set of skills we need to do the work we need to do well. So I always studied that as the researcher side of me with young people. But about 10 years ago, I really felt called to get training as a life coach and a leadership coach. I just had so many people in my life, friends, graduate students, colleagues, coming to me to ask to hold space and bear witness to their own processes and seeking advice. So I figured, wow, if people are going to keep asking me these kind of questions, I should go and get training to be able to support them well. And so what I love about life coaching is that it's about that internal sense that we all have it within us, kind of like when Glinda the Good Witch to Dorothy in Wizard of Oz says, you always had it in you, you just needed to look for it. And so a coach is about helping each one of us find that purpose, find that inner sense of truth that we know is inside of us and bring it out. So it's about asking really deep questions and helping folks to kind of peel away layers of the onion to understand what drives them and what makes them happy. So getting that training and working with my own clients, and naturally, a lot of my clients are in the academic world because that's my own social network. I just realized where I felt that my research work with young people actually could help faculty and actually could help anyone in the workplace when they're thinking about if they're stuck in their career. And I think a lot of us just are struggling with motivation right now in some ways after being in a pandemic for such a long time and reevaluating what is the purpose of work in our lives and what type of work do we really want to be doing. So this book focuses mainly on professors, but the framework is really about this ABCs of ways that anyone can really use those tools to help to think about ways to connect their work more closely to their purpose. And then there's also sections in the book about really being a researcher of whatever workplace you're in to understand unspoken codes. And that's where inequities can really happen, is that a lot of the information you need to be successful is really connected to things that aren't in any workbook or anyone gives you training on, and it's not in the employee handbook or manual. It's unspoken information that can be related to privileges that you might have, where were you the first person in your family to go to school? Are people speaking or behaving in ways that are just very different than how you were raised and things like that? So, or, you know, or folks who've been there for 20 years know things that they think everyone should know, you know, but they're not really sharing, and it's hard to be successful as a new person on the team. So being successful is both about finding purpose and also really trying to understand the rules that aren't being told and finding a connection between those. And so I also talk in the book about what happens when things are unethical or like don't align with your own values in a workplace, and process for discernment for when it's time to speak your mind, when it's time to stay silent, and then when it's time to leave. And the more we're tapped into purpose, the more we're able to make that connection.
Wow, fascinating. So how do we find more meaning and purpose within our workplace or without work?
So a couple of things. One is to get really clear on what your values are. And there's a lot of things you can Google online of lists of values. Brené Brown does some of this work in her books. And getting clear on maybe your top two or three core values and using those as a litmus test for the work that you're doing. Another way is to think about, as I said, what work charges your batteries and what work is draining your batteries. And that negative piece is maybe something we notice more than the positive piece. What are times in our job or our work where we really get stuck? And maybe it's from a performance review or feedback that's been negative, or just kind of a dead feeling around the work that you're doing. So those kind of moments of whether it's deadness or negativity can help to spark what I would say the opposite of purpose edge, which is sometimes called the inner critic, or that voice in our head that's all the shoulds. You should be this way. You should be in this career. You should behave this way in this career. And the more we get caught in that voice, which isn't us, it isn't our core self, it isn't our purpose, it's kind of like this dichotomy. And so it's important to not listen to this chatter in our heads and think about how these voices actually got in there. So finding our purpose and finding what it is that we're wanting to be doing can also help us to get unstuck, to not feel like we're in the wrong place, to be able to to improve productivity, because as we're connecting to things that are exciting and meaningful to us, then we're doing work that energizes our batteries instead of drains them.
Can you talk more about that? Like how do we know when we do find a work journey, a direction that is aligned with our purpose?
Mm-hmm. So one scholar who has a really, really long name, Mahali Csikszentmihalyi, introduced this concept back in the 90s called flow. And I think we've all had that feeling of whenever you're working and you lose track of time, you lose track of space, it's like you duck your head and you dive into a project and all of a sudden hours have gone by. Video games sometimes create this. I have a colleague who is a disabled vet, and he plays video games to get into that flow state, because when he's in that flow state, he can't feel his pain anymore. So there's all kinds of reasons to get into that flow state. But in our work world, it's the type of work that we just become so absorbed into that we lose all track of our awareness. So that's kind of a deepest flow of finding that work that feeds us. But it's, again, I think that tethering to values, tethering to what is meaningful within your own self. And it doesn't have to be the most noble, crazy thing. It could be that you're really good at, cutting hair, and that it just, you know, that that's something that you can do in a way that no one else does. And there's some magic about how you do it. That's different. So it doesn't mean you have to save the world, although it's always great to have more people doing that. But there's something about it that just feels like you're more you, and you come alive when doing it those are some good wayfinder ways to kind of find your path and keep walking towards it.
Nice. Yeah. You mentioned about finding your values. What are some exercises people can do to discover what their true values are?
So I have in the book a few different exercises. So in addition to just looking at a list of values, a couple other ways you can think about it are exercises such as if you got into the elevator of someone very important in your field and you had 30 seconds to talk about what is most important and what you're most passionate about, what would you talk about? Alternatively, if you could write a tweet that could be read all over the world about something related to your purpose or it's something important to you, what would you choose to tweet about? Or if you could put a billboard up next to the highway that is, in the main artery where you live, what would you put on the billboard? So those kind of dialing it down to a short thing, a few words or an image or a short conversation can help you to really get clear. What are the things that matter and what would I want to say if I can? And just to keep practicing with that. And so that, and try on a few. You might have like 10 different ones to start with of like, I think, but the more you try them on, the more you might get a sense as to what that looks like.
Cool. I like those exercises. So let's say someone does the exercise and discover their core values and they're realizing that they're at this job that doesn't really align with that. What should that person do? Should they stay within that job or find a new job?
I think it's important that we don't need to leap in another direction in one step, that we can take a lot of little steps. So it could be exploring in their current job if there's ways to deepen their work by aligning it more, by saying yes to if they have agency around certain projects that seem to be more interesting to them than other projects, for example. There's also, our whole lives are not necessarily our paid jobs. So it could be having either a side hustle or a hobby or getting some training or taking a class or starting to paint again, starting to play music again, and really broadening the pieces of our lives where we find that meaning as we continue to find ways that our paid work can get us there. So sometimes our hobby or our side hustle can turn into our paid job if we keep growing it and building it. So that's another way to do that. I know when I was in my 20s and I was living in DC right out of college, it was hard to get the jobs and we all wanted to save the world, or at least I did. But I couldn't get hired to do that. So I had a paid job where I was a research assistant and working really hard. And then in the evening, I would volunteer for a Habitat for Humanity organization where I was able to lead and be an executive director of an all-women's build. And so through volunteer work, I was able to connect to my purpose in that phase of my life more clearly than my paid job. And I had the time in my life to be able to juggle those two things. So right now I'm life coaching and I'm still a professor. And for me, those two things work very well together. And allow me to kind of try on different pieces of who I am in different spaces. So it may also be that all the things you're interested in just don't fit into one part of your life, that you might have different things you want to try on and you need different roles to be able to do that.
Interesting. So what would you say were your values back then when you were after college? Like, were you aware of those values or do you attribute them now looking back?
Yeah, I was brought up in a very activist household and was taught to question authority and to really stand up for injustice. And that was a really core value that I brought through my life. Since then, I've become a Quaker, which is a spiritual practice that aligns with justice work as well. And so it's that notion of truly like trying to make a difference in helping the world was a core purpose of kind of who I was. And there are a lot of ways we can all change the world. So I knew I wanted to do something related to nonprofits, related to teaching, related to service. And I also realized that some of my strengths were in teaching and leadership and coaching. So it just kind of naturally dovetailed together for me around those issues, plus I just love politics, to eventually get my degrees and teach at various levels. I've taught everything from preschool to first grade to now I teach college students and graduate students. And really the process isn't that different teaching a five-year-old than a 45-year-old. We all have basic desires to learn and to be passionate and to allow our own sense of who we are to come through. So, I feel like we all kind of go down different paths as we're trying to figure out what we're doing. And so we only need to know what the next step is. Mm-hmm. We also need to realize that life is a series of experiences. And there isn't just one experience that's going to fulfill all your hopes and dreams. But over the course of your life, building experiences by taking one next step, are ways to have the broader sense of fulfillment as we begin to age and get a sense that we've had a life well lived.
Yeah. Would you say that now, compared to back then, your values have evolved to something else? Like, what's your dominant value now that you are trying to live by?
You know, it's interesting because I think what I'm realizing is that for me, at least, that my work life has been fairly clear and straightforward in terms of living lives around justice and service and integrity. And I've had more to grow around values around important relationships with family, with friends, and learning how to articulate those around authenticity and integrity, which also show up for me in the workplace, but also what connection means. And so I think it's not so much that they've changed, but they've gotten more honed, and I've gotten more clear on what boundaries need to be set in all places, at home and in the workplace, and also ways to build trust and ways to build connection that kind of eliminate. We all have certain wounds from childhood, so trying to heal those while also trying to just be the best mother and wife and friend and daughter and colleague and coworker that I can be. And so being willing to kind of try on different ways and really continue to what I would say being a seeker. I think for all of us, it's about being willingness to keep learning about what we're passionate about, what our purpose is in any given moment in time, and how we can connect with others is just the ongoing work of life.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. I want to take a step back and ask you a question. What should people do to thrive in their workplace that most people are not doing?
So it's just been such an interesting time to think about work, because I think there was the answer I would have given a few years ago would have been that we're all overscheduled, and a lot of folks are just wishing for more time. So how to create more time and space in their work environment. And now I feel like the need is for connection, that people are just absolutely starved for connection and trust. And with connection, we build trust. And so it's hard to make difficult decisions in workplaces right now because people don't know one another. There's not that informal way to build relationships. So I would say right now, thriving in the workplace is not so much about carving out self-care, although that's always important, but it's about intentionally finding ways to know yourself and colleagues better. And even within saying that, it's like we've lost the skills of connection. So I'm an extreme extrovert. And I'll spend some time with friends and be exhausted now and be like, do I not like these people anymore? What has happened? And it's the muscle that we're not exercising around human interaction. So we need to really realize that some frustrations and tiredness that we're feeling is because we're not using this muscle, but also in order to feel fulfillment in the workplace, we're, as Brené Brown again says, we're hardwired for connection. Mm-hmm. So it's just at the core of who we are and our relationships with others, and having positive relations and trust with our coworkers is at the core of it. So thriving means that we know who we're working with and we like them. And if even if you have work that you love doing, if the people around you are just feel like weights pulling on you, it's not going to be a place you're going to stay forever. You're going to either find a way to isolate your own work or you're going to move on. So I think that that's really a key to thriving right now is the stuff we don't talk about, the softer side of connection and collaboration and finding those ways to build trust again.
Yeah, I totally agree. So what are your thoughts on like remote work versus hybrid work or fully on-site work?
I think it really depends on your profession and your personality, and you're going to need to lean into different things around that. My husband is an introvert and thrilled at the idea that he might be able to stay home and spread his workday out throughout the day longer. He doesn't need as much of that connection, but he's also been in this job for a really long time, so he already kind of knows the people involved. I think if we are going to, and I don't think we're ever going to go back to an in-person environment fully ever again. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I think we're going to need to learn how to build structures into online spaces. So for example, when I run board meetings, we take the first 10 minutes to talk to one another about something good in our lives. And I didn't do that initially because I just felt like people didn't want to be on Zoom as long and they just have to get through this and find ways to make it shorter. But what we realized is that we didn't know one another and some folks had joined this board who had never met in person. And by sharing good things going on in our lives, it helped us to know each other better and to make connections that just helped us to see each other as a full 3D person and not just as a role in this organization that we were working on. So we need to build informal spaces within technology so that people can just be with one another again. And that's going to be really critical if we're going to stay in a hybrid environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important. I just started a new job and we work in a hybrid work environment. And as you said, I had no idea how much I myself crave connection, in-person connection. So, and yeah, it's been great. So I wanted to ask you, so on the opposite end of thriving in the workplace, there are these things that hold us back, such as, as you mentioned, our inner critic and a sense of imposter syndrome. So that prevents us from thriving. So how can we overcome those things?
Mm-hmm. There's a few things that I think are really important. One is to really feel, is assuming you haven't been through some really difficult traumas, and if so, please go see a helping professional. But it's really about connecting with your own body and understanding where we get knowledge from within our body. So whenever I do exercises in workshops, and I have this work in the book as well, around where is that negative voice coming from? Usually it's in the head, it's in the neck, it's in the shoulders. And when I think about what are moments in your life where you knew something was true, or you had a premonition that proved to be correct, or you just felt something greater than yourself, people tend to think of their heart and their chest. That's called the Hara or Dantian in Eastern religions, this kind of inner space of truth. And so even exercises to kind of pull your shoulders back and open your heart further, and yoga poses are all about like kind of opening that space of wisdom. And so so part of that is just to know when you're trying to access truth in yourself versus getting rid of that negative chatter, where in your body to listen for that is step one. And another piece is to just really disassociate from that negative voice and realize it's not truth and it's not you. So I have my clients give their inner critics names to sketch them, and also to be really playful with them. So you know, as I said, if we're experiencing deep trauma or something that connects to a very dark moment, it's really important to work through these kind of things with a helping professional. But beyond that, it's the more we're playful with it, the more that we can kind of see it and not have it take over our lives. The more we get angry at it or frustrated, the more it kind of feeds on our negative energy. So by kind of just noticing it and also even thanking it, because a lot of what the inner critic has done sometimes is it was protection mechanisms from parts of your previous life where you needed more protection, for example, but you don't need it anymore, that you have more tools, you have more skills to be able to say, thank you for trying to protect me from this experience, because maybe you had a really awful teacher who told you not to believe in yourself at some point. And in that moment, you needed to like armor up and not pay attention to that voice. But now you can realize that every time you start writing a document, that teacher doesn't need to be there anymore. You know, you finished that class a long time ago and walked away from that. So what are the truths you know about yourself? A fun thing you can do is if you're willing to go on social media and just ask people to give three words to describe yourself, collect them and throw them into like a word cloud or something like that to see which words are crop up the most. You might be surprised, and you might be surprised. You might learn things in all kinds of ways. In some ways, of course, it's going to be a very affirming exercise. There may also be words that you're like, wow, I didn't know that about myself. Or it even could be, wow, I actually want to start putting forward a different side of myself than what everyone is seeing. So there's a lot of ways that we could learn about ourselves by asking people to say, who am I? What do you see as my gifts to the world? And it'll help you to know which ones are coming forward and which ones you want to shine more.
Wow, I love that. I should try that. I'm a bit too afraid to try it, but.
See,
we're trying,
right? You got to be brave to do this. But I promise that the overcoming the angst about it, if it feels a little angsty, sometimes that's exactly what you need to do. So as a coach, if I had you say to me, gosh, I feel a little afraid about asking people, I would say, well, then instead of asking 10 people, ask 50. Just do it even more and lean into that unease. And really help to push yourself through that to get yourself to a place of confidence.
Okay. So earlier you mentioned that you've reached this level where you were getting all these 5 stars. Mm-hmm. Then at some point you realize, oh, I got all these 5 stars, but I'm not totally satisfied. Something feels lacking, right? What was that journey like for you? Like, how did you realize that?
I think a lot of times when folks say, the midlife crisis has hit or what have you, that's really what it is. It's this this loss of a lack of realization of an internal purpose. And so I feel like in the current age, it may be something that happens multiple times. It may be something that happens when, you know, I have a 20-year-old who's in college right now, and her idea of what college was is not what college is for anybody right now in the pandemic, but also who she is and who she thought she was going to be has changed a lot, because college helps you to change yourself and who you are. So there are, you know, if you were to kind of map out the roadmap of your life, you can identify certain turning points, whether it be due to crises that have happened or wonderful opportunities that you weren't expecting that cause you to reevaluate kind of where you're going. And so I think those are really critical moments to use tools and work with a coach or, you know, grab a book that helps you to work through things, to ask some questions about like, where am I right now, with the work that I'm doing, and does it connect with who do I want to be? Who do I want to be when I grow up? Whether it's a great question to ask when you're 5, but also when you're 50.
Yeah. So for you, was there like a specific moment when you were like, I need to do something about this, because even though I'm achieving all of these things, there's still something missing? Or was there like a specific moment?
I think for me, it was getting tenure, which is one of the main hurdles in my profession, and also just trying to resolve the work-life balance of being a mother of two kids and having a full-time job, and really trying to get honest with myself that I really actually love my full-time job, but parenting really young kids is not always that wonderful. And yet you're not really allowed to say that being a parent sucks sometimes. And so giving myself permission to feel the feelings around what is hard about parenting, and not just that, you know, I'm trying to be the perfect mom. And I think particularly in this generation of moms, there's been a lot of expectation around what, you know, like just trying to, you know, the helicoptering and trying to be perfect. And anytime we try to be perfect, that's a recipe for disaster. And what I realized with my own parenting, and especially when they hit middle school, was the best parenting I could do was be really honest and talk about times that I've failed instead of all the ways that I'm perfect and succeeding. And that's how I can teach them to that when you fall down, you can get back up again. The world doesn't fall apart, that you're resilient, that you're fireproof, not that you're not going to feel pain, as Glennon Doyle says, but that you can move through any pain at all because you're that strong. So I think I hit that moment of I'm not a perfect mom, and what does that mean? And so for me, it was more on the parenting side of things, of learning how to not be perfect. And then eventually I went and got some coaching myself, and was able to kind of be honest and have honest feelings about where things weren't going great. And through being honest about that, it was allowed me to kind of make peace with what doing the best we can means and what actually matters instead of how I'm supposed to be as a parent or as a professor or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So it was after that experience, that's when you decided to go into life coaching?
Yeah. And I just got my own coaching. And then I just got so interested in it, and I kept talking to so many people about it that people started to seek it out for me. And that's when I went to be a coach myself. And I would also say that with a lot of the clients I have right now around workplace issues, another really important thing that I recommend doing at any phase in a career is talking to people who you think have the dream job, or, you know, as you're thinking about how you want to move forward, whether it be you're not happy where you are, or, you know, you just wonder who you want to be in 10 years, even if things are going well. It's almost like a natural part of any prescription of work that I give to my clients, that I say you need to go and talk to 3 to 5 people who are at that next step, whatever that next step is you want to take, like, who are they, and find out about them. And it's not just about finding out about those careers and jobs to see if it's a fit, because that's important. But it's also by having those conversations in a no threat environment, you're not in a job interview, they're going to ask you about you too. And it's going to help you to talk about yourself in ways that maybe you haven't. And by talking about yourself to people who you're emulating, it helps you to figure out who you are too, and helps you to figure out what that purpose is, what is interesting to you, what is resonating for you about what they're doing that's interesting. And also learning ways that they've had a lot of mistakes, and the road is not just straight. And, you know, we all have curves and twists and turns, and some things we didn't work out and some things did. And so learning the different paths and life stories of people who you admire and emulate and want to maybe live a life like, it's really helpful to learn the way they got there, but also where they had troubles, and to learn how to articulate yourself to people to find that resonance is an important word about what are the parts of the conversation that are exciting you and are like, yeah, this is what I want to be doing. This is who I am. This is where I'm coming alive.
Yeah, that's a great advice. Yeah, people should be doing that for sure. Cool. So when you discover life coaching through your own experience with it, What was that journey like? In the beginning, were you kind of like hesitant to go into it? Or did you kind of realize, oh yeah, this is something I definitely want to do and pursue further?
I think what I've learned about myself is that I'm usually a hell yes for things. And where I need to learn is when I need to say no to things. So saying yes to life coaching was really easy for me because I love doing like exploration and going on retreats and yoga and, you know, spiritual stuff. And so I felt like life coaching was an extension of that. I really liked the model of the questions and that the client is a co-builder in the journey as opposed to a therapy model. And I also just had a really great coach who was, before being a coach, she was a doula, a birth coach for me. So I already had a lot of trust with her, which helped. But it really, I think that journey for me was about permission to not be perfect, permission to not have it all figured out, and that a lot of the joy in life is actually the messiness, and that it's okay to not have it all figured out. One of my best friends now is like, one of the things I loved about you when I met you was you were like, you know, I'm a terrible parker and I don't know how to park my car. And I get the notes on my car window of, could you please park straighter? And I just know that about myself. It's never going to get better. I guess it could be if I put some energy into it, but it's like, she's like, you were willing to admit that you suck at something. And I said, well, yeah, I do. I really do. And if I pretended, it's not going to change it. And so even those little things, like how you park your car, like it just is helpful, I realized in life, to be willing to acknowledge like where we're not so great, you know, as well as, of course, that it's only balanced. Then that's advice to give for folks who seek to try to be perfect all the time, which was definitely my persona. Whereas this friend, is somebody who really is this amazing person who never gives herself enough credit. I wouldn't give that advice to her. Instead, you know, she's applying for a new job and I went over to her house and helped write her resume for her because I knew that she wouldn't toot her own horn enough, you know? So we need friends to balance each other out. We need the champions to help folks to feel and articulate themselves stronger. We also need some humility and awareness that appearing as if we have it all figured out is absolutely exhausting and doesn't actually help us to grow.
Wow, that's great. So where would you say you're at on your journey towards your purpose? Would you say you found it, working towards it, living it?
Oh, boy. Well, I would say that for me, it's ever evolving. And that if I'm not taking risks and not having that slightly squishy feeling, then I'm not fully there. So partly also why I am a life coach is so that I feel that I have permission that I can spend money on more training and more learning all the time. So I'm going to be going to New Mexico next month to do a week-long workshop on energy healing, which is something I don't entirely understand at all. So don't ask me what it is yet. I'm going because I don't know. And I'm going as a learner, and not just a learner, but really kind of that feeling of like being new at something and embracing that. So I feel like that for me is the secret sauce of I get bored easily, and I want a challenge. I want to keep learning. So as long as I'm continuing to learn and being curious and trying things on about new modalities and ways of interacting with clients, ways that I can teach, ways that I can coach. And for me, writing is another part. So I'm really clear that those are my things: writing, teaching, coaching. And what is that going to look like? And what am I going to write and teach and coach about? That might change. Are there other pieces of that? And how can I do more of that below the chin work about, you know, how woo-woo do I want to get in terms of like learning about all kinds of other ways of knowing from traditions of a range of places? So that's where my heart is right now, of being really curious about energy and things that we just don't fully understand, and and connection with others that we don't understand, and being brave enough to know that we don't know what we're doing and to try it anyway.
Mm. Yeah, I have an ex-partner who was into energy medicine, and I can't claim to understand myself very much, but seems like it'd be a lot of fun. So what would you say is your current purpose, if you can put it in words?
I think my purpose is exactly what I research with others. My purpose is to help others to make a difference and to learn the tools to get there. And so it's to write about that. It's to teach about that. It's to coach about that. It's to lift others up and help them to see the inner warrior in them, the inner sage, the inner talent, and to shine more brightly.
Beautiful. I'm also curious to hear more about your spiritual journey. So did you have some sort of spiritual awakening of sorts? Like, were you always spiritual? How did this...
Yeah, I wasn't raised in a spiritual tradition. My parents were actually really disillusioned with traditional religion. So I remember I had a Bible in my room, and I would like be like, what? Like, I knew I wasn't even sure if I was allowed to look at it. And so for me, spirituality is something I started to explore in college. And just trying to understand, is there something bigger than us? And as a scientist and a social scientist, you know, I want evidence around that. But I think where a couple of things that came really true to me around that. One was whenever I was in graduate school and I was trying to have my first child, and we were really struggling, and went and saw an infertility specialist, and finally conceived and lost that baby. And that moment of loss for us was so deep and profound. And I went to a counselor on campus. I was at Stanford in grad school at the time. And she said to me, you know, you can't think your way through this, Dana. This isn't a part of life that being smart or being a graduate student is going to help you with. You're going to, again, have to access this from the chin down. You're going to need to use other modalities. You're going to need to use movement and breath and drumming. And it's about emotion and almost, you know, pulling these feelings outside of you and making sense in the world in ways that there's nothing logical about what happened to you. You know, loss is not something that is very easy to explain. There's no why answer. So I really took that time to read a range of things, to do a lot of journaling, to try to understand my own relationship with all the big questions of life that we can't answer yet through science. And just started my path on being a seeker and being really curious. And then moving here to State College, I wanted my children to be raised in some sort of a faith tradition, whatever it is, just so that they could like have something to start with. And so I went church shopping, which I think is actually more common than you think. And I just knew I felt I was home when I hit the Quakers. Their principles are the spices, simplicity, peace, integrity, community, equality. So it really aligned with my life's tradition around social justice. And it was the one place where I felt like I could send them to Sunday school or to the little kids' school. And I had no concerns about what was said to them, about them being naturally creative, whole kids themselves and being filled with light and love. I was concerned about faith traditions that go on the idea that we're the original sin and the notion of original sin and that there's we're naturally evil. I did not feel comfortable in my family having that taught to my children. So that's where I found Quaker faith. And I just kept going deeper and deeper into the notion that Quakers have that we connect with a broader presence through, we know it experientially. And that's where the scientist in me appreciates it, that there's not someone telling us, but you sit in silence and you listen and you feel connection. And, you stand up to speak if there is something that that you're feeling led to do from a source bigger than yourself. And so it helped me to train those muscles again, the below the chin muscles around, what does that mean to have something that a voice that's bigger than me and how to access that. And that's kind of led to all these different range of experiences towards connection that it's bigger than the conscious logical connection of how we interrelate to one another. And, you know, reading these fabulous books about how trees talk to one another and, you know, seeing examples in science as well. But that is my faith path. And it's so connected to me to coaching, because for me, it's about getting still. All the magic to life is getting still and quiet enough to hear your own truth. And it's going to speak to you if you listen. And you know, Oprah calls it God whispers about there are things you're meant to do in your life. And first it'll whisper, and then eventually it'll literally may knock you over the head if you're not listening, and knock you off your feet if you continue down a path that is not serving you or is not where you're meant to be. So better to listen when it's a whisper than when it's a 2x4 literally flying across the room and knocking you out. So.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Are there any particular spiritual practices that you've done that you recommend that people do to get in touch with their higher selves, their inner voice, their inner wisdom?
I think it's personal. And, you know, everyone says to meditate. And yes, if you can pull that off, amen. I'm definitely somebody that is constantly moving, and exercise is really important to me. And so I find that I'm able to have a clear connection through movement. And particularly I got a dog so that I could take a walk every day, because the dog was going to make me, because I realized that I was a better person when I get outside every day. And I'm fortunate enough to live in a college town where, you know, at the end of our street, there's woods. So being in the woods every day for 45 minutes is my spiritual practice. And it connects. And when things don't make sense in the world, I get out, I just go to the woods. And that's, Ralph Waldo Emerson calls it the oversoul, but it's almost like those window blinds that you turn and then it's solid and then it opens and you can see. That experience with nature, Thoreau talks about this a lot too, is kind of this blind that if you sit and you spend enough time, you gain truths of the universe it's also called forest bathing in Japan. So I think for me, it's hiking and just being among trees and being outdoors and just connecting with animals too, connecting with my dogs, connecting with young children, that energy, that innocence is, you know, and I still try to sit in silence, and I go to Quaker meeting, which is an hour of silence. And I gain insights there, but I also know that I won't be able to sit in silence unless I've done like an hour workout beforehand and got my energy, like my anxiousness out, and then I can sit still. So there's a lot of wonders that can happen by sitting still. But some of us have a lot of energy to get out first.
Do you find that you were able to get clarity about your purpose after you started doing these spiritual practices? Or did you have that clarity beforehand already?
I think that, you know, just like I said, of a muscle that you learned and developed, that I've gotten stronger at being able to access that voice more quickly. I've been able to really believe that if you ask questions of yourself and just throw it out there to the universe, that the universe will answer. If you're brave enough to ask the question, ask your questions wisely, because you know that so that you get the answers that you really want to hear. So for example, like I'm a big believer in like intention and what intentions you set on I always choose a word for the year. I make my kids choose a word for the year. We do little craft activities around it. And 1 year I chose the word elevate, and the same day I sprained my ankle and I had to keep it elevated. So choose your words wisely. Choose your, if you use a vision board or visual ways of articulating purpose, and I think I highly recommend that too. And I talk about that in the book as well. Again, be really precise and specific. I discourage clients from saying, I want a life of more excitement, for example, because I was like, excitement can be good and it can be bad. Mm-hmm. Excitement can be drama. So be really clear and precise and have a clear intention as to what that looks like. I also really discourage clients from saying that their goal is to make money. The research shows that that's not going to get you to a purpose, that you will make more money the more tapped into your sense of purpose that's there, because you're just naturally going to be a fantastic person at what you're doing. And it'll feel like money is flowing in faster, but you can't get to that. That's an antecedent or a consequence of finding purpose. If your purpose is to make money, you're not necessarily going to get there. And if you do, if you make a lot of money, that's one of the biggest external stars of now what? Like, money doesn't have meaning in itself beyond the initial level of getting out of poverty, is what the research said. There's no correlation between money and happiness beyond not having to worry about basic need.
Mm. Quick question. What's your word for this year?
My word for this year, what is my word for this year? Well, I'll tell you about my word for last year and then we'll get to this year. My word for last year was arise, Maven, which is two words. My friend, my daughter and my son were like, that's two words. But it was just this sense of I needed to elevate without using that word, so I didn't sprain my ankle again. Really just stepping into my power. Mm-hmm. And the concept of Maven is somebody who's an expert in something. So, mm-hmm. So last year I wrote two books, including this was one of the books, and just really put myself out there in terms of my business, and in terms of all those types of things. And other words that I've chosen in the past are amplify, connection, and really my word for this year is believe. And for me, believe is it's a deepening. It's not a worrying about what's going to happen. It's an inner knowing. It's a trusting. It's a connecting with source. It's faith in some ways that my children and my husband are going to be just fine. That speaking from an authentic place of groundedness is the path forward. So for me, the word believe, like the opposite is worry and anxiety. And we're in such a, we've had such a time of unknowing of, we think the virus is going some way and it goes in another way. And it's made people so unsettled that there's no control. There's no control over this. Every time we think we have control over it, it changes. And so the idea of belief is that, again, we're naturally creative, resourceful, and whole, and that whatever present moment we're in is going to be just fine, and that this is where I'm meant to be, and that I can grow and be the best version of myself in wherever we're landing this year. And so that's where the belief comes from for me.
That's an amazing word for the year. My word for this is actually fearless creativity.
Nice. So what does that mean for you?
So it means like being creative without judging myself, without seeking validations from others, and just do it for my own enjoyment and express myself and not hold myself back.
Yeah, that is one of the keys to purpose. And I think I love the word creativity. I use that word a lot with my clients, and curiosity. And I think both of those words really help to encourage that childlike mind again, that playfulness, and really not taking ourselves necessarily so seriously. And when we're serious, the shoulds and the inner critic comes in. And to be more willing to try it out and be a risk taker and have fun with it and not take it all so that it has to, again, be perfect. So creativity, I think, is one of the hallmarks of ways to find happiness. And just seeing the world and listening and being curious and expressing through art and art meaning a whole lot of different things is a part of it too.
Yeah, totally. I wanted to ask you, so for people who have found their purpose, but they're too afraid to step out of their comfort zone, what steps should they take to get there?
Oh, so they think they know what they want, but they're not really sure how to get there. So I think what we were talking about just now around the playfulness is helpful. I think starting in low stakes places around maybe having it start out as a hobby or as a side hustle, trying on new ways of being among safer people, taking baby steps, and also really finding a way to monitor your practice, having an accountability mechanism to show that you are, whatever steps you're taking, you're stepping forward into it, even if it's just dipping your toe. I had this thing, it really worked through the month of January, I have to be honest, the month of February, not as much, but it was a habit tracker. And it was like the word January with the numbers in it. And I took a color pencil and every day I did writing on my blog for my coaching practice, I got to color in a square. I know people who use it for working out, for example, or what have you. But I think having a habit, what any of the habit trackers that are out there on your phone or colored pencils, to show that this is a goal that I have. So you got to set a goal first. Maybe you put it on a vision board. You got to tell some people what it is you want to do. So it's not just in your heart. So trusted friends can ask you about it. And then you have to work on it. So I can say I want a coaching practice, but if I'm not going to spend a certain amount of hours a week in terms of building a pipeline for clients, it's not going to just miraculously appear. I think part of what a vision process is it's setting an intention. And by setting an intention, building resonance around steps to move forward. So it's putting a vision board doesn't necessarily mean sticking something up there and then just expecting that like you don't have any work to do on it. So if you value yourself, I think that's part of it, is it's all about worthiness and self-worth. And if you value yourself and there's something that's important for you for your life, then you've got to work on it. You've got to believe that you're worthy of the time and energy to grow into the person that you want to be. So that could involve getting a coach or another helping professional. It could include having an accountability partner. But true self-worth is about leaning into the work that you're meant to do.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. Great insight. Thank you. Before we go to the lightning round, I'm curious. So the pandemic has gone on for 2 years now. I'm curious to hear, how has the pandemic changed you?
You know, I definitely am someone that has always tried to cram too much into a day. And I've naturally just slowed down and found that I need less. And that I can be perfectly happy in my home and not leave it and not interact with other people other than my partner and my kids. So it's caused me to slow down. It's caused me to really stop drinking alcohol because I realized I only drink alcohol if I'm out with people. So now when I do go out, I'm like, oh, I have no interest in drinking alcohol anymore. So, it's caused me to realize that you can get too much sleep. It's caused me to read probably about 100 novels, to get a puppy that I love. So kind of really, when we think of like a gratitude practice, you know, I really try to push my clients to that it is an important practice, but it's about the teeny tiny moments, not like, my coach told me to do a gratitude practice and was like, it's just dumb. I mean, every time I open the page, I'm like, yeah, I'm grateful for my job and my kids and my house. And she's like, just stop. You're not grateful for any of that. Maybe you're grateful when you shut the door and you don't have to interact with anybody. And she's like, get honest. And I think the pandemic has allowed us to try on honest, like, how do we really want to live if nobody's looking? And to step away from like the treadmill that of life enough to reevaluate what purpose.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Great. Yes. Thank you. Wow. I've experienced a lot of the same thing that you mentioned. All right. On that note, let's move on to the lightning round. I'm just going to ask you just short, rapid-fire questions, and you can answer as long or as short as you want. Ready?
Okay.
All right. What is one thing you like to do to relax?
Yoga.
What is one thing you like to do for fun?
Walk with friends and have really great conversations while we're walking or hiking in the woods.
Nice. What is one thing that makes you enthusiastic?
I think when I do have a connection with somebody or I have a conversation that just gets me so excited, that makes me enthusiastic. Also, endorphins make me enthusiastic. So when I like work out and like an hour after I work out, I am very enthusiastic.
Nice. What is one habit you always do for a great day?
Walking my dogs in the woods.
And what is one habit you are working on?
Waking up earlier.
Me too. How's that going?
No, it's going terribly. In fact, it's going so terribly that this week I've kind of like, what if I just let go of that dream? Because I've always been a night owl and my calendar is just, you know, my clock's just turning more and more and I'm doing more of my work in the evening. And I'm like, what if that's okay? Like, what if the idea of being a morning person is a should, and that maybe that's just not who I am and I'm not meant to be a morning person. Not sure.
I did get this sunrise alarm clock recently where it starts, you know, glowing like a sunlight and it chirps birds. That's the alarm.
Yeah.
Instead of using my phone, that has been working for me. I don't know. You might want
to. I tried to do something like that. Uh-huh. And my husband is like, well, I have no interest in getting up at this time. You want to get up. So just that's really annoying stuff. So no sunrise alarm clock, unfortunately.
Got it. All right. What is the most important lesson you've ever learned? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
I think the most important lesson is to be still and know that the voice deep inside will guide you to where you need to be.
If
you get quiet and listen enough.
Yeah, that's another great one. What's a book that changed your life?
I have just been so blown away by Brené Brown and the series of books that she's written, starting with The Gifts of Imperfection. They've definitely changed my life and helped me to want to be a coach.
Great. If you're not doing what you are doing today, what would you be doing instead?
I always thought I was going to go back to Washington, D.C. and like be like working on the Hill or whatever. In the current environment, I'm really glad I didn't end up doing that life. But I think in my 20s, I would have told you that I was going to work in politics more directly. I think I also, there's another version of my life where I'm like a civil rights lawyer. That could have worked for me, but I just didn't do it. And I'm happy that I didn't, but.
Yeah. And what is your ideal life like?
You know, I've got to get myself, my head around, like, I feel like my life is pretty ideal right now. As long as my kids are mentally healthy, it feels pretty ideal. I feel like I have a lot of agency and control and freedom over how I do my work and where I do my work and when I do my work. And I think there's a balance in a lot of jobs between power and freedom, and I've chose freedom. And that's why I went into academia versus going back to Washington, D.C. to be an advocate or a policy advocate, because as a professor, I have a lot of control over what work I do and how I do it. So, and in the pandemic, I'm just finding that I learned through coaching how to not hustle for my worth on the work side. And I'm learning how to not hustle from my worth on the social side too, around friendship and things like that. I think the isolation of quarantine actually helped me to kind of pare down who matters and realize that, you know, you can only truly have so many people that are truly meaningful and beyond, and to really invest in those people who are investing in you. And that it's fine to have places that have a lot of people and energy around, but really get clear on who your people are, and invest in that. I think I'm also going to be an empty nester next, in a few months as my second child goes off to college. And part of me just wants to like get one of those campers and drive about the country. Since I can do a lot of my work remotely and being blessed with that, and just like going for a while, and just being wherever they're like, just going from woods to woods to desert to, you know, being so obsessed with being outside and finding meaning with that, just wanting to try on different spaces and what it feels like to be in them.
Yeah. I have a feeling a few months from now, when I reach out to you, you will be doing that, I feel like.
I might be. Just might be.
Why not? How do you define purpose?
Purpose is the inner voice of truth when we get quiet. And it is decisions that feel like when we're doing them, that we're becoming energized instead of depleted.
Great. That's a great definition. And lastly, is there any requests you would like our listeners to do?
I think the requests are to remain curious, and to listen, and to listen to the inner voice, and also to listen to others. And that's the magic.
Great. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook at Dana the Coach. You can find me at danamitra.net. And you can find me on Instagram at The Professor Coach. And on Twitter, I'm Doc Dana, D-O-C.
Awesome. I'll add all those links into the show notes. Wow. Thank you so much, Dana Mitra, for being a part of a Work in Purpose podcast. I love hearing your stories and insights. Thank you so much.
It was great talking with you. Thanks for having me.